Welcome to Art and Technology. This is WPS1 Art Radio. I'm your host, Daniel Durning, and we're bringing you the show today from the WPS1 studios at the Clock Tower in Manhattan. Today's guests are Marjan Mogadam and Alexander Reyna. Would you like to say hello, Marjan?
Hi.
And would you like to say hello, Xander?
Moo.
Okay, Xander's...
cow impersonation.
Fabled cow impersonation.
I'll talk from now on, I promise.
Okay, no, you don't have to in my account. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit about our guests. Marjan Mogadam is an award-winning New York City-based artist, and she has exhibited her computer art and animations internationally at numerous galleries and museums, including international conferences and festivals such as SIGGRAPH and the New York International Video and New Media Festival. Ms. Mogadam was one of the first artists to create GIF 89A animations on the internet and is listed as part of the Internet Pioneer Hall. She is a full professor of computer graphics and animation at Long Island University. And Alexander Reyna is an artist working in both traditional and digital media, has exhibited his work in New York at the Scope Art Fair, Hunter College in ABC Nor Rio. He has had solo exhibitions of his painting and digital art in New York and other exhibitions in the United States and overseas. He has also taught at the School of Visual Arts and more recently in the master's program at NYU. He is an assistant professor at Mercy College and a very good cow impersonator. Now, both my artists are multidisciplinary artists. I recently saw Xander's print and video work at the 2006 Diva Art Fair, and I recently saw Marjan's animations and experimental multimedia performance with choreographer Nina Benaham. And so would you like to tell us a little bit about your work? And we can start first with Marjan.
Actually, the piece that you saw was called Unfurling at the Kumble Theater of Long Island University, and that was a collaboration with Ninochka Benaham, the choreographer, and we had computer animation and dance, and it was actually an exciting piece because we had a chance to try out lots of different techniques, and live sound design was with Johnny Sender.
Okay, and Xander, would you like to tell us a little about your work?
Just really quickly, my work deals with sort of the intersection of culture and personal idiosyncrasies. So basically what that means is I see things in culture and I translate that. Certain things stick, and those things that stick I choose to represent. I kind of work cross-platform, so some of it comes out as painting, some of it comes out as drawing, some of it comes out as video. And all the different platforms kind of reinforce each other. So like the video will go into the drawing will go into the painting will go back into the drawing. It's contemporary, but it also looks backwards as much as it looks forward.
How far backwards?
Well, you saw in my studio. I mean, I was working with the Hokusai image, so that's fairly far back. But, I mean, a lot of it, especially in terms of painting, I mean, you can go back to the Renaissance or further. You know, the moment you make a mark with oil, it kind of talks about a history that's, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years old. So it's simultaneously way back and way forward. But no. I don't do choreography.
Oh, okay. And Marjan, you some of your large-scale digital paintings, especially the Adoration series, which employs a fractal hybrid mix, also deals with kind of a classical motif of painting like the Madonna and Child by painters like David. Would you like to tell us a little about these paintings or these pieces?
Yeah, actually, the Adoration series was originally inspired by, I was reading William Gibson and Bruce Sterling's The Difference Engine, which was this great cyberpunk novel in which an artificially intelligent computer in the future is seeking its origins through Babbage's steam engine in Victorian England. And I was really fascinated by that idea, and I kind of liked that idea of a constructed mythology. So I decided to create these future, you know, sort of like AI humanoids that are seeking their origins in technological artifacts and products that we developed a relationship with. So the Adoration series was really about that. I mean, there was an adoration of gas tank, and, you know, that was a gas tank of a motorcycle And then there was the adoration of Pac-Man, which was, you know, Pac-Man on a lot of levels was like the first golem, really, and the first artificial entity, I sometimes think, and also a favorite game of mine. I was very good at it. And then there's adoration of telephone. Most of these pieces were exhibited at SIGGRAPH, and I was using the sort of like pictorial composition of classical painting because, you know, I remember in the 90s, there was this whole fascination in 3D, which is mostly what I do, with realism. And most of the publishings and research at the time was really looking at art history and, you know, Renaissance references and things of that kind. And so I thought that these AI engines would most likely reenact these scenes out of classical painting because so much of the Euclidean geometry behind 3D innovations came out of the Renaissance. So they would be sort of reenacting those scenes. And the whole thing with the whole thing with the adoration series was that I was dealing with the Madonna and child pairing with these AI females mostly and these technological products. But the amazing part of it was I started to slowly discover the sort of post-humanist experiences that I had with these technological counterparts. I remember when I was doing adoration of telephone, I just went through this whole period of like really examining my own physical, you know, relationship with the telephone and how much the telephone was an extension of my body. And so the series for me has really become like an exploration of my own sort of like dependency on these appendages that I have, technological appendages. And the fractals in this part where I remember when I was thinking, well, what are these female artificially intelligent humanoids going to look like? And I realized their skin would most likely have this type of like fractal dermal pigmentation. And so that's sort of what I aimed for. And so the relationship between classical painting and the whole, you know, symbolism of the adoration series for me was part of it came out of that whole fixation of 3D technology with, you know, realism. And part of it also came out of, like, my own fascination with that type of artwork as well and sort of playing around with all those images. The most recent adorations are, of course, Adoration of Vibrator. And that's like a whole, you know, separate series because each adoration, each Madonna and Child composition has these sort of side pieces, which I kind of call iconic fetishized product shots.
Now, Xander, your work reflects a slightly different sensibility.
Actually, but one thing I think that where our work actually is very similar right off the bat is this sort of obsession with what did you call it?
Which one?
Iconographic fetish.
Yeah.
Iconic fetishized.
Okay, so
yeah. Essentially, well, that's a very
right. And essentially, the way I read that is when you have like an iconographic fetish. Basically, for me, I think it's almost exactly the same thing as how I operate. I call it sort of idiosyncratic fixation, but I mean, really, it's just a semantic thing. Like, it's essentially saying that there are things that you iconify, you grab, you sort of like choose to depict. And you fetishize them, you sort of like make them sort of like stand out like the Pac-Man or the Vibrator or something like that. So I think that's a really interesting simulation, or not simulation, but a similarity. I think that, I think a lot of artists do that too, but, you know, right off the bat, it's kind of neat. That's a good kind of connection.
Well, I mean, there is the very contemporary relationship of like iPod, therefore I am. And Xander, you actually incorporate images like the iPod commercial into your work.
Right.
But
that's not just one thing that, you know, I keep cutting everyone off. But
please do.
you know, one thing that people ask me about my work all the time, they'll see, like, I put a lot of things that are sort of hip or contemporary, like the iPod commercial or, you know, certain music from the iPod ads. The point I want to make really, really quickly about that is even though I choose to use those things, I'm fixated by those things. I think they're really neat. I think they're sort of interesting things to choose to work with. I'm not hip or cool because I use them, though. I don't know. I don't actually own an iPod myself.
Well, no, I think you're hip and cool because you can do cow sounds, you know. But the extension of... one of the big problems that I have as an artist that uses digital technologies and often contemplate how do you talk about contemporary society kind of bridging that gap of legal and illegal referencing, especially to commercial advertising.
Well, I mean, the thing is for me at least, I really think of my work, it is digital to a certain extent, it is painting to a certain extent, but I really think of it as across-the-board sampling, and I think sampling is rooted... sort of traditionally in collage. So, you know, collage is something that's just been accepted for years as like an art practice. And I think that there's sort of, if you look at the work that way, no one's ever really taken a collage artist to court and said, you know, you can't actually take this picture here and cut it out. And the instances where people have actually been taken to court, what they found is that the type of work that we do as contemporary artists where we take something and we choose to sort of repurpose it is very protected. It's different from, like, if we were to go on Canal Street and resell a Fendi and call it, like, a Fundy, mm-hmm. right? But the work that we do is aiming to sort of comment on or extend or transform is the legalistic term for it. And so it's really more of an act of sort of exploration using pre-made units as opposed to taking that pre-made unit and just selling it straight off.
Well, I mean,
so it's a recombination, and that act is sort of what makes it new or transformative.
Well, I mean, like Jeffrey Koons was kind of reiterating very kind of classic kitsch.
Right.
And I think mainly because of the money that he actually makes from his art, he was sued.
And he lost, too.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But I think there's also, I mean, not to go too deep into the legalistic sides of things, because I'm not a lawyer and I don't really know anything about it. But I would say is that some of the things I have read about it, they sort of claim that it was Koons' approach that he didn't strike the jury as a common person,
yeah.
and they saw him as someone who was this rich guy who was kind of like making fun of common people.
It was also the puppies.
Exactly. So the thing that I really want to stress in terms of my work is that my work deals with media on a lot of levels, and media is in fact totally middle class, and it's totally aimed at like everyone out there. It's not elitist, and so in a way, it's kind of like a celebration of like American culture, it's a celebration of my culture, it's a celebration of like idiosyncratic culture. But I'm not any better than anyone else.
Well,
that's my legal disclaimer.
Yeah, I think I had this discussion with you in terms of what is middle class, and
Oh, we can't talk about that.
It's the masses,
right?
So
the masses.
Whichever the masses,
and that makes perfect sense because it's mass consumption, yeah. It's mass production, it's for the masses.
Yeah, and it's also the opium of the masses.
Except
this radio station, which is hopefully a little bit more.
The bread and circuses also.
Right.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, yeah, that is what Marx would say about that. So it is kind of interesting.
And also McLuhan really did warn about the addictive nature of television. And, you know, you sort of examine all the technologies that have come about since television, and you realize it's sort of like going from morphine to like, you know, crystal meth or something in terms of the power and significance of the drug-like effect.
Well, like MTV being crystal meth? Or
MTV?
Well, more. I mean, I think iPods, internet, websites.
Yeah,
you know, the whole
television
thing.
Is nothing. Television,
television
is like
drug. Just a starter drug. Yeah. It's the marijuana, really.
is marijuana a starter drug?
I think marijuana is the starter drug.
I thought
if you end up with crystal meth, yeah, I'd say marijuana is the starter drug.
Budweiser and Viceroy's.
Okay.
Baby Tylenol. There's your starter drug.
No, I think Starbucks is actually cornering the market. So
Red Bull is, but that's because of the stimulants and hormones in it.
Yeah, they don't sell it at grammar school. I haven't seen any Red Bull consumption at like rest stops on the highway. So, you know. But that's another, a little bit more of a different subject. Marjan, you we're going to be interrupted when I ask you this question, but with the station break. But Marjan, you do a little bit different. You do what would be considered more computer-based originals.
Yeah.
Your work starts in the computer, ends with the computer, and only when you start going into printing processes or, let's say, video display, does your work turn into a little bit more analog or non-digital.
I mean, my work is it's entirely computer-based, so I don't make use of any photographic elements or scans or anything that originates outside of the computer. So I do call them computer originals.
So how do you present the work, though?
For when it comes to the output, that's when it actually becomes physicalized.
Is that
in
the
some
work,
way.
Though?
No, I think the work for me is, the way I perceive it, the work is it's all the digital files. And,
right.
and like most computer artists, I look at output as, you know, potentially many different things.
Right.
And it really depends on, you know, what direction I want to go, whether I want to go with print or animation or, you know, web work or streaming.
And your print work is a little bit more substantial. I mean, you create these, like, what is it, 3x4 feet?
Yeah, they're 40, 50-inch pieces, yeah. Those pieces take me a really, really long time to do because, the 3D modeling has to be done to basically stand up at a size of 50 inches. And, you know, I mean, I had a broadcast background, so it's amazing what you can get away with when you're working for like 720 by 480, but it's really different when you're aiming for large format printing. And also in terms of the, I mean, for me, something that I always loved about painting is that, you know, you could approach a painting up close and see so many more worlds. And something that disappoints me about print is I approach a print up close and I see the actual dot grain, and that really disappoints me. Like, instead of seeing the richness that I anticipate or the richness that I get from painting, I see the dot screen. So something that I had to work really hard on was to deliver that level of detail using fractals, so you actually had a similar process. Yeah, I'm going to have to stop, right?
No. I don't want you to stop.
Right in the middle of that.
Let me just interrupt. This is WPS1 Art Radio. You're listening to Art and Technologies, discussions with visual and sound artists. I'm your host, Daniel Durning, and today's guests, as you can hear, are Marjan Mogadam speaking and Alexander Rayner. So not to interrupt you, Marjan, you were saying?
Yeah, and so what I had to really do was to try to deliver detail at a very high resolution, so that if you approach, like if you walk up close to my prints and start looking at it, you're going to see more and more details. And so there's like a fractal-like process. It's almost like you're rendering fractals as you zoom in. And I also think that with some of the recent animations that I've been doing, though, it's sort of different, because I've been using these digital sculptures that I then deform and manipulate through direct audio triggers. So it's really interesting to take a sculptural sort of process and introduce music and noise and sound into it as you know, an additional sculpting aid. And so that's a whole other process, too.
Well, in the past, you've done performances, Contemplation of Chaos, is something that you were a little bit more renowned of doing in New York City galleries like Postmaster. And you had a Cyberdelia Chaoscape sculptural installation seen in the 90s. And your Chaoscape was an immersive video chamber where the viewer experienced pulsating fractal graphics and sound while reclined in a tilting lounge chair. Could you tell us how this work relates to your upcoming piece in this summer?
Yeah, actually in the 90s, most of the animation work I was doing was using traditional sort of keyframe animation approach. So, I was trying to sync up to the sound. But like I said, the new animations that I've been doing, the 69 sessions, which is actually up on my website, I'm using a combination of, traditional hand sort of keyframing and direct audio modulation. And the animations, by the way, are going to be shown for the pre-show at the Billy Berg Film Festival this weekend in Williamsburg. And Computer 69, one of the animations, is a selection of the 24-hour film festival, DCTV's, and that's going to be on 2 weeks, I think, at DCTV. But for this summer, I'm doing a really interesting piece. It's called Iterated 69 Sessions. And the whole idea is it's an interactive jam session between me as a computer animator, Flavia Sparacino, a computer scientist, and two musicians who are going to be performing live, Adam Kane and Michael Inanuto. They're both guitar players. And the audience at the SIGGRAPH Guerrilla Studio, who's going to be participating and influencing the sound and the visuals through their presence. And we're using unencumbering technologies like crowd detection to actually allow the audience to to influence the piece through their physical presence. And the animations are going to use a combination of digital, sort of sculptural masses that are deformed by a combination of the live musical performance and crowd density. What the audience is going to wear is going to influence the colors and all sorts of other variables. But the piece is going to continue to iterate, thus the iterated 69 sessions, because after the actual traditional performance is over, we're going to continue to output visuals that were generated during the performance as a series of large format prints and also digital sculptures as art pieces. And SIGGRAPH Guerrilla Studio attendees are also going to be able to submit their artwork, and then we're going to further deform their pieces using the data from the performance. So this is going to go on for a whole week, basically.
Now, for those who don't know, the SIGGRAPH is the special interest group graphics. It's mm-hmm. the largest international computer conference that is going to be held this year up in Boston. In the end of July,
like the first
beginning
August.
Yeah, of July.
It starts July 30th, and our piece, the Iterated 69 Sessions, is the opening piece for the Guerrilla Studio on July 30th, Sunday, July 30th, and it runs till Friday the 4th or 5th. Yeah.
And you can go to seagraph.org to get more information on
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Oh, actually, an interesting thing on Seagraph, and again, I mm-hmm. could be just throwing out lies left and right here, but I was actually going to submit my work to the Electronica Festival. Is that what it's called?
The Electronica
Art Gallery?
Yeah, yeah. Apparently, though, I was reading the fine print, and if your work uses pre-existing material as its source material, you're not allowed to submit. So entire genre is out. Thank you, Seagraph. Thank you very much.
No, I'm.
But there are a lot of shows that do that, just because of the legal liability
No,
issues.
I hear that.
Seagraph in particular does have a large
But that's because Seagraph also services the professional industry.
No, I know. It's
well,
on,
that's like, yeah.
I
got that.
Yeah, I think the iPod people will get very upset. So anyhow, let's see. How do you see digital work integrated in today's marketplace and the reception? How do you feel that it's received in gallery and museums? We've come a long way from the early shows such as Cybernetic Serendipity in 68, and Marjan, you participated in Synesthesia in the 90s, and certainly the Bitstream show at the turn of the millennium really established computer-based art in a museum setting.
Right.
Although avenues like Seagraph had been doing it since the early 70s. How do you see this either affecting your work, or how have you been affected by these elements of computer graphics in the gallery system?
Well, first, you know, one thing I want to say, and this goes to Marjan's comments before. You know, you were talking, Marjan, about your work actually being in printed form, large format, and I asked you, I said, you know, is that the work? And you said, oh, no, it's actually the work is making the work, and then the large format is the print of the work, essentially, is what you're saying. In some way, it's a
document.
Actually,
the work is the digital files, and
exactly.
then the output
exactly.
is, you know, whatever
exactly.
direction the work wants
exactly.
to go in. I always kind of look at it that way.
This is an interesting concept, I think, because in terms of how the art world deals with that concept, the work, it's almost like conceptual art, because the work is the all of the digital files for people who are using digital technology, and then the documentation is the print that you make. But the problem is that work that uses digital technology is not valued in the same way that conceptual art values the document. In other words, you know, if I'm like a is it Joseph Kosuth who did the chair? So you do, I could be wrong, I'm sorry, art world. But, you know, you have a person who takes a photo of a chair and says that this photo of a chair is significant because of this thing. The photo of the chair becomes the document. The document is seen as valuable because it's documenting the ideas. The problem with digital technology is that when I make a video or when I make a print, the collector sees that and says, this is the piece, and they don't understand all of the conceptual backbone that got to that level. Not just theoretical conceptual backbone. In other words, you know, am I using sort of postmodern thought? Am I using sampling? Am I working with contemporary culture? Blah, blah, blah. But they don't understand the purely technical backbone. And the problem is that, you know, for me to make a video, we're talking 6 months to a year of work to make 2 minutes. Because it's, you know, we all understand it's if you see my videos at my website www.alexanderreyner.com, you'll find that they're quite involved, and you know the source material alone is hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of days of work. The problem is I sell my videos are valued a certain way because most videos are tied into the sort of the photography slash documentary kind of thing. People who sell videos for maybe $10,000, that would be the top end of a video. But that would barely cover my costs. And I don't cover my costs because, obviously, I'm not selling video for $10,000. But you can always buy one for that.
Well,
I wanted to answer.
That was the longest run-on sentence I've ever done.
I wanted to address a different aspect of this question, although I think...
Because that's important, but you should talk too.
Yeah.
No, but I think Xander's points are very important too. Because you know, I mean, if it takes you 6 months to do a video, imagine how long it takes me to do a 3D animation.
Oh no, my work also uses animation too.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
But I just wanted to bring up the fact that you brought up digital work, you know, digital artwork in the marketplace. And to me, there's like two different marketplaces. I mean, there's two completely different worlds that I deal with, because I've been doing computer art and digital art for a very, very long time. And for me, there's two separate worlds here. There's a world of contemporary art that occasionally shows digital work. And I say occasionally because the percentage of work that's actually shown that is computer-based or digital is so small and so minuscule when you consider, you know, what actually is shown, that I'm not sure if the work has really impacted contemporary art to that extent.
I think right now it's Corey Archangel, Brian Alford, me, and maybe three other people.
Yeah, it's minuscule. So there's that world. And then there's this other world, which is the world of computer art and digital art. And that includes everything from conferences such as SIGGRAPH to, you know, specialized museum shows and gallery shows and academia and international organizations and festivals that sponsor digital and computer art. And that's basically how the medium has evolved. And it's very similar to the early origins of photography or video art, if you look at it. It's exactly the same thing. I mean, in the beginning, you had the world of photography, and then you had the world of fine arts. And you, of course, had collectors and people in the fine arts world who were savvy about photography. But and right now, you do have people in the fine arts world who are savvy about computer art. But, you know, it's still, to me, two completely different worlds. And as a computer artist, I mean, I've kind of stuck to the world of, you know, computer art, because that's where I get nurtured, and that's where I get what I need to get in order to continue to develop and evolve as an artist. Because if I stuck to the world of contemporary art, I really wouldn't get the sort of nurturing that I need in order to evolve and develop my work, mostly because my work involves a lot of R&D. And there's so much R&D involved in my work that I need to almost stick, you know, to my field and my industry for my work to keep evolving. Another thing that I wanted to bring up was also Xander brought up a good point, that so much of conceptual art was about the idea being paramount, you know, and idea being more important than the physical, you know, manifestation of the work. And to some extent, with digital art, you're actually seeing that the idea aspect of the work is now becoming, you know, digitized. So the computer is like really allowing artists to reiterate and, you know, further extend the idea through all the different possibilities that exist on the computer.
Just a real quick follow-up to that, to your first...
You're taking notes.
I had to, because, you know, the thing is that sometimes my short-term memory goes when I get excited. But, you know, you made an interesting point. This goes back to when we were talking about the idea of video, and you said, oh, you know, I do animation and you're doing video. I think that actually highlights one of the problems we're talking about here, because for the art world understands video as taking a camera, putting it on your shoulder, kind of looking around, and maybe doing something conceptual with it. And yes, I'm sorry, art world, there are a lot of other things you can do with it too, but you get the general gist. The trick is that for people like you and me, video is not just documenting sort of things out there. My video involves so much computer work, so much animation, so much modeling, so much rotoscoping, all of those other things. For me, it's pointless. It gets me to where I need to be. But the thing is, there's that immense technological backbone. The problem is that most people in the art world who are coming from art schools with a video background, they understand photography. And photography goes one direction: click, process, change, stop. And my video and your stuff is different.
Okay. Now, if you want to see Xander's and Marjan's work, I'd like each one of you to take an opportunity just to tell us what is coming up for you.
I think what's coming up this weekend, this Saturday night, my animations are being shown as the pre-show for the Billy Burke Short Film Festival in McCarran Park Swimming Pool in Williamsburg, which I think is a fantastic place to have a film festival. And also the July 8th, I believe 7th and 8th, is a 24-hour film festival at DCTV. Possibly also at CinemaScope, Scope Art Fair, and the Hamptons. And also the performance piece using my animations and collaboration with the other people that I mentioned is Iterated 69 Sessions, the opening event for the SIGGRAPH Guerrilla Studio in Boston, and that's on July 30th at the Convention Center.
Thank you. And Xander?
Okay, let me think. I have work that's just been put on a podcast at Perpetual Art Machine, and they're also doing the Scope Hamptons thing.
Yeah.
So I was chosen to be one of the featured artists for that. In addition, the work will be shown at Scope Hamptons. I have a solo show coming up at Miller Wetzel Gallery in Cleveland in September, a group show at Gabriel Rolt Gallery in Amsterdam in September, a solo show in Amsterdam next spring at Gabriel Rolt, and a solo show in New York, but that's... We're not going to talk about that because we don't want to ruin it before it happens.
Okay.
But it's good.
Well, I'd like to.
I just also wanted to add that pretty much all my work can also be seen on my website. That's marjan.com, marjan.com.
We will put all the links on the site. I would like to thank.
Well,
our
he did a shameless plug. For
I would
site,
like.
So I
totally
I'm
did.
Sitting here waiting for my opportunity.
Let me thank the guests for being here today. You're listening to Marjan Mogadam and Alexander Rayner.
.com.
I would like to. thank our
slash beta
sound engineer Daryl McNeil. And in closing, I would like to say, your mother loves you, and heal the planet.